Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So my name is Ian Vergaisler, and I own Regalis Foods.
But you're a natural born hustler.
Yeah, I'm definitely like a reincarnated used car salesman.
Hi, I'm Helen Holliman, editor-in-chief of Munchies, and welcome back to a brand new season of Munchies, the podcast. So we took a break, we took a month off, and we came back to discover the great news. The world is still spinning. We're super excited to kick off the new year and this new season with something weird and delicious. Today, we're talking truffles. So this has come up on the show a few times, and if you've been listening, you probably know that I've worked some pretty crazy jobs before finally winding up as editor-in-chief of Munchies. About 5 years ago, I actually worked as a truffle dealer, like the stinky fungus. And I know that probably sounds like some made-up dream job, but I was actually trying to make it as a freelance food writer. So I started selling this stuff on the side to pay my bills. As a truffle dealer, I'd go to JFK early in the morning, pick up some precious shipments from Europe, and then I'd spend the day pushing these beautiful things to the city's finest chefs and restaurants as if I was some sort of culinary drug dealer. But I think that's one of the really amazing things about New York City. If you can imagine a weird opportunity or a way to make money here, there's probably someone doing it. I was living a dual life. I'd be writing at every opportunity and then waking up to text messages at 2 a.m. with some guy on the other end asking for 500 grams of white for 10 a.m. the next day. Truffles really are like drugs of the food world. They're not exactly easy to get your hands on, and when you do find them, they're crazy expensive. It's honestly a flavor you can't forget. The thing is, truffles are 98% water. So from the minute you get it at the airport to the minute you have to sell it, your product's depreciating, so you gotta move it fast. And that was a crazy experience. But there's a piece of the story that's actually really remarkable. Ian, the guy that I worked for, was the mastermind behind the whole truffle hustle, if you will. And he was only 19 years old. Ian Perkaisla got his first taste of truffles when he was still in high school. He became absolutely obsessed. And after he graduated, he moved from Arkansas to New York City. And it wasn't long before he became a renowned truffle dealer, mainly because of the quality of his products, but also because he was so incredibly young. Today, Ian owns his own company called Regalis Foods, and he's expanded into all kinds of amazing rare and foraged products. And he's even got a line of caviar that he's developed with David Chang of Momofuku. But truffles are still the heart of his business. And these days, he's selling hundreds of pounds a week. We're meeting up with Ian at his warehouse in Long Island City. It's a nondescript building surrounded by chop shops and factories in a totally industrial section of New York. It doesn't look like food heaven from the street, but as soon as you walk in, you're bombarded with this unmistakable funk that is fresh truffles.
Thank you. Thank
this
you.
Is why I was a terrible salesman. I just, yeah. I remember looking on the classifieds and it literally just said like needed truffle sorter / like office assistant or something. Right. And I was like, what the hell is this? And I clicked on the info and it was like, yeah, come weigh truffles and like do some administrative work. And I was like, that sounds like my fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I remember calling you on the phone because I had emailed you and been like, hey, is this still listed? Because it had been up for a while. We talked on the phone, and like the voice on the other line was like, hi, yes, it's still available. Can you come in for an interview tomorrow? And I remember being like, yeah. No, you sounded like a grown-ass adult. And I went to Hoboken. Uh-huh. And I remember walking from the train station to the 20-minute walk mm-hmm. to
reverse commute.
The reverse commute, which was very exotic. New Jersey. Yeah.
Yes.
But when I walked up to the, it was a warehouse, like a huge warehouse, and it looked like a scene from The Sopranos because it was the warehouse at night that you go into and murder someone. And when I opened the door, I remember seeing people like running up and down the stairwell. And I was worried for them because they were all sweating and panting. And I was like, are you okay? And somebody was like, oh, yeah, yeah, we're working out, because there was a CrossFit
next to her.
And it smelled crazy because like when you open that door into this stairwell.
Well, it smelled like paint thinner. Yeah.
Well, that, but no, it smelled like truffles, which at the time, if you don't know what truffles. That smells like, it's a crazy offensive, like, whew. And then you open the door and there was this like 19-year-old kid and this weird older Italian man. And I was like, what's happening here? What's going on? You know?
Yeah. It was, I guess, an old carpet factory. So there was carpet on the wall, carpet on the ceiling. But we just had like a little space carved out of that warehouse for our stuff.
But like you were running a truffle company for this like Italian millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Going into New York City every day, hustling accounts in your sad PT Cruiser, which had like the hubcaps falling off because you had worked so hard.
Well, I'd gotten rammed by 10 different cabs.
Yeah, over the course of
3 years. Yeah. But,
like, you know, when people ask me about what was it like to be a truffle dealer, I always think about you in the sense that, first of all, you're so young, but I think it's rare for people to truly understand, like, why you did it, because it's so unique that you...
I just became totally obsessed with mushrooms and truffles, that I knew that was what I wanted to pursue. And kind of I tasted my very first truffle dish when I was 15. I was visiting some friends and they invited me out to dinner, and they were like, order anything on the menu. And I was like, oh, I gotta take advantage of this, we don't have this fancy shit, you know, back in Arkansas. So I ordered the truffle ravioli dish, because truffles are regarded as like the king of all mushrooms. And like from that moment on, like, you know, the earthiness and just this like strange and exotic flavor just totally, you know, like took over. But the flavor of a truffle is like very hard to describe. Like everyone has their own interpretation of what it smells like. There was a guy that once told me that white truffles smelled like weed and Italian sausage to him. To me, they have like a very strong garlic and like almost cheesy aroma. The black truffles have, I know you guys were saying, like leather and kind of gasoline. I think they have like a very like sharp cognac, almost like chocolatey, like very earthy aroma, which Helen's shaking her head.
It smells like Kalamata olives that have like gone off. That's how I would describe it. In a good way. I think they smell good, but I'm clearly a white truffle girl myself, but it's really like one of the last wild foods out there that's really hard to
produce. Well, it's like it's honestly the last entirely natural ingredient. I mean, they've never been successfully cultivated on a commercial scale. The white truffle in particular has never been successfully cultivated. And they grow underground. I mean, truffles are a underground fungus that grow on tree roots. I mean, they have a symbiotic relationship with trees, and they can only be found by trained animal, and due to their high perishability, which is often like a week, that just furthers their allure and their price. I mean, people ask me all the time, like, why do truffles cost so much? It's because, you know, all of those different things. I mean, there's hardly any, they've never been cultivated, and they grow underground. And then I got back to Arkansas and I was like, all right, mom, like, can you buy me a truffle or two? Like, I really want to like replicate this ravioli dish. And she was basically like, hell no, like, we're in Arkansas, like, this is like our like simple life now that we've started. So I was like, okay, like, I need to figure out a way of like getting my hands on some truffles. So that's when I started like surfing the web and kind of spending the next 6 months researching truffles and like checking out books at the library on truffles and like just learning as much as I could about, you know, everything. And that's when I found this small French company that was willing to send me a kilo of black summer truffles. So I used like Christmas and birthday savings from like several years that I had pooled together to buy these truffles, and they were FedExed, and several days later they arrived, and I realized a kilo of truffle is actually quite a lot of truffles. So that's when I started cold calling the three best restaurants in Arkansas, because Arkansas only has like three high-end restaurants. So I stopped at like Target and bought a cheap scale, and then at, like Office Depot for like a little invoice book, and just showed up at the front door and was like, where's the kitchen? Like, where's the chef? I've got some truffles, you know. Do you want to buy them? And that's what happened. And then I was able to sell everything except for like one or two truffles, which I later, I mean, I cooked with, because that was my original intention. And then for the next year, I just kept cold calling local restaurants. My parents would take turns driving me to like Houston and Austin and these different larger cities to cold call product. And I would just hop out and, you know, walk in the back door and say, oh, I've got truffles. And then that's when I started realizing, you know, this could actually be a business.
Thinking about being a truffle dealer, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but like, you are Skyping with a truffle hunter somewhere in Croatia who's probably not wearing pants, but is wearing like a button-up shirt to talk to you, to be like, yes, we have truffles today. And they won't tell you their location because like, they don't want to give up their source. You get this box of stuff. You drive to the airport, JFK, to this weird cargo center where there's like literally dead bodies, live puppies, and, you know, Christian Louboutin shoes waiting to be picked up by somebody. And then you drive into the city and you have to garner a new account, and you walk into the kitchen and you're the asshole, because it's like coming into a kitchen either right before service or whatever time it is.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And they don't know who you are. It's like get out of here. Yeah. It's horrifying. Like, it's actually horrifying, like, to have to do that, because you have such a ability to do it fearlessly. Whereas I was this like food writer who was writing for like GQ and these other places during my day job. And I had worked as a cook, so I knew that like going into kitchens was the social cues in there of being terrified of pissing people off. Right. Also, I'm a woman. So I like walking in to the kitchen, it's like, hey, little lady, like you can get out of here.
Right.
And having to show them what the product is. I mean, that's kind of where you shine, because you can school them on, no, actually this is from here, grows this way. I mean, you are a hustler, but it's all real knowledge. It's not like you're BSing people.
Well, I kind of had to, like, you know, put the brakes on early on, because I felt like really confident, I feel like, in the early days. And like, I kind of had to wean off of like that confidence a little bit, because sometimes it would like get me in trouble with restaurants, with chefs, because like some chefs are just so like egotistical, where it's like, you know, you really can't teach, you know, like an old dog new tricks.
When you started Regalis, we were also thinking about, like, there are so many truffle businesses out there, if you will. And so it was like, what could you do to be better? And sure. I feel like, much like, you know, people compare truffle dealing to drug dealing, because it is. It's like pushing weight, etc. But like, that's why we did start selling the forage stuff, you know, the sumac, right. The...
Well, we wanted to be different from like everyone else. And I think that like we realized that forage edibles... This was like in the height of like Noma's peak and like the Scandinavian foraging, you know, movement. And no other company was selling like, you know, Japanese knotweed and black locust flower and sea rocket and, you know, wild bamboo heart and like all these random forage edibles, which I think we both realize we're not going to be a moneymaker, but something that could set us apart from the rest. Like, I remember walking into Danielle for the very first time, and I knew, you know, they must have gotten hounded by like 20 different truffle people every year. But I knew if I walk in with something different, I could, you know, get their attention. And I walked in with like this really aromatic elderflower. And they were like, oh, this is like awesome. Like, we can't buy elderflower from anyone else. And then I kind of used that as a way of like transitioning to like other products and being like, oh, we've got the mushrooms. Oh, and we've got the truffles. And so like every time I would walk in, I'd be like, oh yeah, and we like also do these other things. And so I think that's really like how, like what the success, like the recipe for success was early on, was like not going in the door right away with truffles, but these other ingredients, which we weren't making any money on. So it was like walking in this fine line of like, you know, how much time do we devote to selling these products that we make no money on, when, you know, that's like the key to like getting these accounts, basically.
Well, it's kind of like, here's a dime bag of weed. Here, try a little cocaine. Here, try heroin. It's cool. Like, that's kind of what we were doing. But I also feel like there used to be a weirdo who was a forager. I won't name this person, but somebody who's nomadic and would literally like send FedEx boxes of like foraged items to restaurants. Mm-hmm. And like, they had this amazing ability because they'd be like, this is, you know, wild Angelica, and here's some like, you know, prickly ash and whatever. They'd be like, I went to the fields of New Hampshire and I spent an afternoon there looking for this for you, chef. And people would love it. You wouldn't make any money on it, but that was like our competitor in terms of being like,
all right. But he was like so sketchy, and like he would go MIA like all the time. So I think our reliability is like what was able to like win over customers, because this guy would like just totally disappear. And actually early on, I had had a conversation with him about distributing his product, and he was like all for it. And then at the very last moment, he was like, oh, actually, no, I don't want to do that. So I was like, okay, well, we're still going to do this. So he got really pissed that he was like sending those threatening text messages.
Oh, that's right.
He like was every like, month.
Your matsutake's not from Maine, is it? You're lying to me. Whatever.
Yeah, anyway, there's countless.
Do you remember weirdos. That time that we tried to get wild Angelica from those foragers in California?
And it was not Angelica.
And it was actually hemlock, which is deadly. So we literally, we like, wild Angelica is basically like wild rhubarb, right?
Essentially, yeah.
So we like, we find this dude. Well, no, Ian finds this guy in California who's some like, whatever, dude who claims to know some foragers. And these foragers are like, yeah, yeah, we can totally get wild Angelica. And Ian's like on his cell phone going, please, can you verify? Like, please identify it, because it's a dead ringer for hemlock. Mm-hmm. And they're like, how many pounds do you want? And we're like, 20 pounds or something, yeah. For like, what, Danielle or some fancy account.
Sure.
And by the time we go through this, I'm like, Ian, what's the deal if we kill people accidentally with like wild edibles? Because like,
yeah, it was always so difficult, because it was like, there's so many look-alike plants that are poisonous that, you know, we could only sell stuff if we were 100% confident in like, you know, what they actually were. And it was funny because like, we were selling in Arkansas, I would forage for these fruit called pawpaw, which they're essentially a tropical fruit. But they're like indigenous to North America, and they grow from like Florida all the way up to Maine. And I would find them in Arkansas. And so I was like, oh, we should like start selling pawpaws, because like no one else has them. And sure enough, like no one knew what a pawpaw was. Like, we would take them to like, you know, I don't even know who, Jean George and like Le Bernardin and whoever else. And like no one knew what a pawpaw was. And it's essentially a fruit that has like a cross between like a mango and banana kind of flavor. And it has these giant black seeds. And like historically, like if you eat these black seeds, you have like scratchy ass syndrome. So we knew like, keep away from the seeds.
No, but well, wait. It will make you like projectile vomit too. Well, like, it's gnarly.
Yes. So there was this restaurant called Gwinnett Street in Brooklyn. Oh, and it was like up and coming and like really hot. And we started selling them product, and we sold them pawpaw, and we told them like, make sure you don't eat the seeds. And they're like, yeah, 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 whatever, whatever. So there's this machine called a Paco Jet, which basically, like, you know, like, turns anything into, like, perfect sorbet. And so they just put pure pawpaw pulp in this, like, cylinder and froze it. And they didn't screen it for, like, seeds. So they pureed it and did whatever. And I think, like, there was this one time where they were all trying the sorbet, and there were like 10 chefs, like all in a circle, like all taking a bite at the same time, and they all projectile vomited.
And then like diarrhea for like a day.
A day, probably longer.
Yeah. But that was the thing. We were like, it is really cool fruit. Like what you and I share is a Rain Man / dork factor, which is like, as a kid, I was obsessed with frogs and classifying all of them. Then it was turtles. Then it was rocks, and then I, you know, it went on from there. And you were the same way, where it's like, the truffle thing and the wild food thing, I don't, it's obvious where it came from to me. Like, you started with rocks and diamond cutting when you were 10.
Yes, that's like a whole different story, but yes.
No, but you focus in on these things, and I feel like you seek out these items in a way that, like, you have an unbelievable ability to master sort of like a taxonomy of a thing, like much like the diamond cutting, which you and sit around and hang out with like 80-year-old men and literally diamond cut and sell rocks to his classmates, right?
Yeah, no, like when I was in middle school, I was obsessed with rocks and gemstones. And I don't know, like there's like this reoccurring theme in my life of like being obsessed with like items that are rare and like hard to find and unusual, and
like being a truffle dealer or just like a specialty foods person in New York City especially, I think is one of the greatest jobs because you get to see weird things on the street. Like working for you, I saw a crying clown in costume on their cell phone on Fifth Avenue crying. And then I saw Chuck Close get out of his minivan and check out his, who I thought was his assistant, like took a nice long look at her derriere as she walked into his studio. And then I realized like, oh, that's his fiance. And I got to like see inside his studio as I was carrying like 6 boxes of mushrooms. But you get to see these like special moments in New York that no one else does because you're doing these drop-offs at pretty high profile places and you're going all over the city, and I feel like that's something that I miss a lot.
But not too much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Ian Perkaista for sharing some truffles and posting that classified ad all those years ago, because I probably would have been out of a job if it wasn't for him. And thanks so much to Sean Gray of Momofuku Co. and my fantastic podcast producer, Phil Domachowski. It's good to be back in the saddle with you, kid. Ian actually has a new book out. It's called Truffle Boy, and you should definitely check it out. We're just getting started this year. We have some amazing stuff planned for you guys. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the next episode. So until then, get all of our delicious Munchies content over at munchies.tv. Hit us up at Munchies on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook too. And if you like the show, show us some love. Rate it on iTunes because it actually helps us out. I'm Helen Holliman. I'll catch you soon.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.